The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Hey, Ken Krawchuk here, and welcome to episode 68 of the Pennsylvania Project. As you may know, here at the Pennsylvania Project, our vision is a better Pennsylvania. To achieve that vision, our mission is to boldly showcase the political, cultural, and environmental challenges facing contemporary Pennsylvania, and to relentlessly pursue correct solutions. But more important than solving the problem correctly is to solve the correct problem, even if it's about something dramatically important, like rescuing democracy from the hands of the tyrants. We have another jurisprudential episode planned for today, and like all episodes of the Pennsylvania Project, it's divided into three parts. You, them, and me. Part one is all about you, your questions, your opinions, your solutions, your whatevers. And rather than a call-in format, we utilize an email-in format. So if you have something to say, you can always drop us a line at pennsylvaniaproject.com. Today for the you part, we have our latest regular feature, Unscripted Cohorts, plus questions about statues and integrity tests. After the you part comes part two, the them part, where each episode we host a guest to help showcase the political, cultural, and or environmental issues facing Pennsylvania. Today's guest is 100% political. He's Drew Miller, lead attorney for the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party's ballot access lawsuit. After that comes the me portion of the Pennsylvania Project, where it will be my turn, your caster, Ken Krawchuk. I'll be focusing on some particular issue that really sticks in my craw. Today, I'll be ranting about people pulling down statues. And throughout the show, as is our long-established custom, we'll be featuring a Pennsylvania Toastmaster to serve as narrator to read our live commercials. Today's narrator is a member of two clubs, the Doylestown Club in, you guessed it, Doylestown, and the Harleysville Toastmaster Club in, easy one, Harleysville. And he's the Harleysville Club president, too. Welcome to the Pennsylvania Project, Evan Transu.
Thanks a lot, Ken.
Glad to have you here. Yeah, I have a question for you. What do you like about being a Toastmaster?
I think the number one thing I like about being a Toastmaster is the fact that I can expect to get honest feedback from people after I give a speech, and no one's judging me if I mess up. It truly is just a place where we're focusing on growth.
That way you can improve.
Yes.
If you don't know what you're doing wrong, you can never stop it.
Correct.
You sound like me. That's what I love about it. Well, welcome. Good to have you here. We also have with us a second Toastmaster, according to one of our ancient customs. He's here to help read and respond to whatever comes into our mailbag and join in on discussions with our guest. It's a role that we call cohort. Today's cohort is making his second appearance on the Pennsylvania Project. He's from Cerner Toastmasters Club in Malvern, David Zezza. Welcome back to the Pennsylvania Project, David.
It is great to be back, Ken. Thanks so much for having me.
And you actually accepted the invitation to come back?
I did. I feel like the folks here are a little crazy, and I'm kind of right in that groove with you. So
I know. Looking forward to sitting out in the parking lot afterwards when we all relax.
Absolutely.
That's what it's going to be. Now, this is your first time as cohort, too.
It is, indeed.
You're nervous?
No, not really.
Nah, you're Toastmaster. We Toastmasters don't get nervous. And poor Evan's over there shaking in his boots. No.
We don't show it, at least.
That's right. Never show the sweat. But you've been here before, so you know the routine. Our ancient custom, we've been asking a cohort to bring along an unscripted question, similar to table topics at Toastmasters.
Yes, and I have a good one for you today, Ken.
It better be.
It's relevant, and it's focused on Pennsylvania. So over the past few weeks, we've gone from the yellow to the green phase with regards to the coronavirus. And frankly, I'm not really sure what the difference is because it hasn't really impacted me any differently since we've been green. But over the last couple of days specifically, Governor Wolf has imposed new restrictions. He's made masks mandatory in public places. So my question for you is two parts. First, you ran for governor. If you were the governor now, what would you be doing differently? And part two, how do any of these mandates and restrictions get enforced, if at all?
Oh, man, there are some killer questions there, and I could go on for a long time about it. I actually went into these in detail, I guess it was about episode 55 earlier in the pandemic, because I think that Governor Wolf is 100% on the wrong path, absolutely 100% wrong. First of all, Sweden never locked down. Mm-hmm. And starting back in March, this is around episode 50, we were talking about it back then. And since they didn't lock down, you'd expect them to be way at the top. Well, they weren't. Out of the top 9 European countries, they were number 5 back in early March. By the time early April came around, they were number 5, still 5 out of 9. When early May came, 5 out of 9. June came, 5 out of 9. Last time I looked, they're still 5th out of 9. That means there is absolutely no reason to lock down. Now, as governor, and I actually did a speech about that, what I said if I had been elected governor, and I said, just do what your mother said. Wash your hands, cover your mouth when you cough, be careful with other people, don't go out if you're sick, all the things your mom said. And that's what I would have told Pennsylvania to do. And all this red, yellow, green stuff, to be perfectly frank, I have not been paying attention to it at all. You know, my wife and I, we've been ignoring the pandemic. We've been out there visiting our favorite restaurants. Of course, they're only doing takeout, but we'll wind up sitting by a stream or something like that. Figure we have to support people. I'll give you just one quick story. We're cruising along. It's me, my wife, our daughter, and our granddaughter. And she's in the backseat, granddaughter. She's texting her friend. Her friend says, where are you at? And she texts back, Scranton. Scranton? What are you doing in Scranton? Getting a pizza.
Those are my parts, Ken. Yeah. I'm from up that way. Old Forge, actually.
Wow. So do you know Gino and Francesco's in Clark Summit?
I do, actually. My ex-wife's family's from Clark Summit.
Best garlic pizza in the world, man. I love it. And that's where we were going, because we try and help out all of our friends.
Nice.
So there you go. That's what I would have done different. I wouldn't have shut down anything. I wouldn't have thrown hundreds of thousands of people out of work.
Right.
And by the way, by doing all of the quarantines and everything, you actually double the length of the pandemic if you look at history.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I did not know that.
Yep. So it would have been over by now.
And what about enforcement? Do you think any of these things will be enforced?
No, they're not enforcing them. Maybe in Philadelphia. Philadelphia is like a stuffed up the no comment. All right. Did I answer your questions properly?
Yes, I think you did a good job.
And they were good. And thanks for bringing it back up. We haven't talked about the viral nonsense and Governor Big Bad Wolf and his edicts, but we are going to get to it when we get to our guest.
I'm looking forward to that, actually.
I am too.
So moving on to our email questions. Our first question comes from Ed Metz in Monroe County. He said, your three-way test for integrity sounds very similar to someone else's four-way test. Can you guess whose?
Thanks, Ed. You know, and I hadn't considered any connection between the two, or should I say among the 7, until I heard your question. And, you know, and I'm being cryptic here, but I don't know if there are any similarities. But before I go into any details, let me give you some context for what Ed's talking about. In episode 66, I ranted about integrity, about how few people seem to have it, especially politicians, and about how even dictionaries tend to contradict themselves when it comes to defining integrity. As I explained in episode 66, the correct solution, whenever it comes to a question of integrity, is to refer to 3 standard questions. As a matter of fact, they'd be good for any actual or would-be policymaker if you want to evaluate their integrity or any course of action. You could sum it up in 3 questions. Let me give them to you quickly. Number 1, is it the right thing to do? Yes or no. Number 2, is it legal? Yes or no. And number 3, is it the most efficient use of resources? In other words, if it's not right, don't do it. If it is right but not legal, don't do it. If it is right and legal but not the best use of resources, don't do it. But if it is and it is and it is, have at it. And any politician with integrity would have to answer yes to all 3 questions before committing to a plank, a law, course of action, or whatever it is. What Governor Wolf did, getting back to your original question, what he did is not right, it wasn't legal, and it wasn't the best use of resources either. So I guess he failed the integrity test. Anyway, you can check out the rant, episode 66, if you want the details. But getting back to Ed's question, it was that 3-step integrity test that prompted his question about somebody's 4-way test. And I had to think about it for a minute, because it was one of those volunteer service organizations. That's all I knew. And I thought, the Lions? No. The Kiwanis? No. Like, no. Rotary International. They have their time-tested 4-way test. The Rotarians have it. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Rotary.
Very, very vaguely.
They are great. Their four-way test is a nonpartisan, non-sectarian, ethical guide that they use for all their personal and professional relationships. I heard it first time, well, back during the governor campaign when I was invited there to speak. And not meaning to contradict Ed's observation, but let me contradict Ed's observation. I'm not certain that my three standards for integrity map directly with Rotary. But let you judge for yourself. Here is the Rotarian's four-way test. Number one, is it truth? Number two, is it fair to all concerned? Number three, will it build goodwill and friendships? And number four, will it be beneficial to all concerned? And I guess if Governor Big Bad Wolf used those against the corona, it'd been no.
Yeah, I think that's four no's.
Yeah, but when I hear those, alarm bells go off in my head. Regular listeners know that I have this quirk that whenever I hear a subjective word, bells go off. Words like fair, beneficial, goodwill, friendship. Fair to whom? Beneficial, how? Goodwill in whose opinion? And what sort of friends are we talking about here? And truth, yeah, you know, that isn't always subjective, but it might not be depending. So I think there's a missing step in the Rotarian's four-step test, a zeroth step to give the other ones proper context. I went looking around on their website, and I found it pretty quickly. Based on a quote from the founder, Paul Harris, he said, quote, whatever Rotary may mean to us, to the world it will be known by the results it achieves, unquote. Very true words, but you know, there's still something lacking in there, no solid objectivity. So I looked around, I wanted to know the context of that mission, and I found it. Humanitarian service. How's that? There's a watch phrase for you. Humanitarian service that gives context to their four-way test. That gives a context for fair, beneficial, goodwill, friendship, all in the service of humanitarianism. I'm telling you, if you're not familiar with Rotary, they're great Rotarians. The sheer quantity of humanitarian service that they've done over the last 100 years is enormous. It's another thing to come up with all these subjective words, but it's quite another thing to deliver. And they have delivered. If you're not familiar with Rotary International, check them out. They rock. The world is a much better place because of them. But Rotary.org. But let's get back to Ed and his questions. I don't see the connection between the four-step plan and my three standards for integrity. I think they're more orthogonal. Yeah, once you have integrity, then you can be an effective humanitarian. But without integrity, well, there goes that. I don't know, Ed. Maybe I'm missing something here. David, what do you think?
I think they kind of start in the same place, but diverge and maybe have a little bit of a parallel. But I'm going to agree with you. I don't think that they're really congruent there.
Yeah, no, not at all. But I certainly like the approach that I took better. Is it right? Is it legal? Is it efficient? And of course, what they're doing is definitely right. Is it legal? Yeah, so far. Is it efficient? Yeah, these guys are great. So by my test, Rotarians have
integrity.
They rock.
Thanks for that. And our second question comes from good old Bernie McCann, who we heard from last week.
He was live on the show last week. He doesn't quit. I like Bernie.
I've grown to like Bernie myself after listening to the show. So Bernie says, you know, Ken, you've yet to address the vandalizing and removal of statues in Philadelphia, and I'm wondering what you think about that. I think it's well past time for societies to simply dispense with the statuifying and defying historical folks. What do we actually learn from statues? That people were green and large and that they rode angry horses and were covered in bird crap? We do need a way to remember those who have made great contributions to our country's history. Finding a way to do that is the problem. Solve the correct problem, Ken.
Does he sound like a regular listener or what?
It sounds like he is.
Well, Bernie, you are correct. I have not addressed the removal of statues. So you know what? I'm going to do that. I'm going to correct that one today. And when I started looking into it, it turns out the topic is much larger than life and much larger than some of the statues being toppled. And that topic has many, many rantable tentacles to it and sub-tentacles. So, you know, rather than addressing it up front and taking up all the time in the beginning, I'm going to save it for the rant at the end of my show, which is called People Pulling Down Statues. On that prevaricational note, that's going to have to do it for the U portion of episode 68. We're going to pause for this information, and when we return, we'll be meeting with today's guest, lead attorney for the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party's ballot access lawsuit, Drew Miller.
Did you hear the latest news? Almost two-thirds of all federal spending now goes to pay for the welfare state. More than $2.2 trillion, which just about equals federal income. Do you realize what that means? Virtually all tax revenue is now being consumed by the welfare state. But how do we rein in that runaway spending before it destroys America? The answer? The separation of society and state. That's the premise of the new novel, Atlas Snubbed, an unsanctioned parody sequel to Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged. Atlas Snubbed presents a workable alternative to the welfare state as we know it. Atlas Snubbed expertly extends Rand's epic story of a looter's world snubbed by the men of the mind, bringing to life a crumbling post-apocalyptic world where no one need ask who is John Galt, because now they know. Atlas Snubbed, available at all online bookstores or through atlassnubbed.com. Read it today before it's too late.
Here's an interesting question. What do you think of these three ideas? Number one, people have at all times an inalienable right to alter, reform, or abolish their government as they think proper. Number two, juries shall have the right to determine the law as well as the facts. Number three, the right of the citizens to bear arms in defense of themselves and the state shall not be questioned. Do those words sound like they're something taken from a Hollywood political thriller? They're not. They're all direct quotes from Article 1 of the Pennsylvania Constitution. Everyone's heard of the United States Constitution, but have you ever heard of the Pennsylvania Constitution? Have you ever read it? But most importantly, was it ever taught to you in school? If you're like virtually all Pennsylvanians, the answers are likely to be no, no, and no. Well, it's long past time we change those answers to yes, yes, and yes. And you have a crucial part to play in making that come to pass. As you know, we here at the Pennsylvania Project are all about solutions. So we've authored a petition demanding that the Pennsylvania Constitution be taught to our children. If you believe it's important for our children to know how our state government works, head over to our website, pennsylvaniaproject.com, and add your name to the growing list of signers. And every time we accumulate another batch of signatures, we'll send a copy of the petition to the governor, the Pennsylvania Board of Education, and each and every one of the 500 school districts in Pennsylvania, asking them right now to start teaching our children the Pennsylvania Constitution. So please sign the petition at pennsylvaniaproject.com. The alternative is yet another generation that has never heard of, let alone read, the Pennsylvania Constitution. And people wonder why no one votes anymore.
You know, I've heard that commercial so many times, and I still take a deep breath and think, man, that's got to change. So, hey, Ken Krawchuk here, and welcome to the Them portion of episode 68 of the Pennsylvania Project, where we host a guest to help us showcase the political, cultural, and or environmental issues facing Pennsylvania. Today's guest is all political. He's Drew Miller, lead attorney for the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party's ballot access lawsuit. A lawsuit whose goal is to reverse the damage done to democracy by the destructive diktats of Governor Big Bad Wolf himself. Drew was our guest back in episode 61 when he first filed the lawsuit for the Libertarian Party. And today he's back with news of the latest results. Welcome back to the Pennsylvania Project, Drew.
Thank you so much, Ken, for having me on your show once again. It's an honor.
Oh, likewise, sir. You've been doing some really, really good work.
I've been very busy indeed, yeah. I've had a lot of long nights, staying up very late and making sure that we, you know, get the filings in on time. And it's been hectic but fun.
Okay. Well, you know, rather than asking everybody to pause everything and go back and listen to episode 61, do you want to give us a quick rundown on what the lawsuit's about?
Sure, yeah. So for the people who didn't turn in last time, this is a lawsuit that was initiated by the Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania, the Green Party of Pennsylvania, and the Constitution Party of Pennsylvania. And what was happening is, you know, after Governor Wolf instituted his stay-at-home orders, he didn't really carve out any exceptions or provide any guidance at all to people who wanted to go around and petition, you know, our people to try to get signatures on the nomination papers. So, and he even said in his orders that, you know, people who disobeyed his orders, you know, were subject to, or I should say, his orders were subject to enforcement. So he was actually telling law enforcement to go out and enforce these orders, you know, if people weren't obeying them.
Yep.
So,
and you know,
Drew, that put us in a difficult.
Let me just jump in there real quick. Just want to let people know that for libertarians, greens, or any independent or third party, if they want to get on the ballot, they have to get signatures from registered voters to say, yes, we want this person's name on the ballot. And when I ran for governor in 2002, I had to get 21,000 signatures to do that, even though Ed Rendell only needed 2,000, even though the Pennsylvania Constitution says all elections shall be equal. So it's been a real headache for us over the years. It's been everything but equal. And then, now this year, here we are in the position where we have to go out into a pandemic and walk up to people and say, hello, here's my pen, here's my paper, sign this, or else Governor Wolf is going to throw us in jail.
So, right.
And that's just some background. This is why we had to do it. And that's where, Drew, that's where you came in.
Yeah, and that's exactly where we're up again. And it was so sad, too, because, you know, just 2 years ago, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, just 2 years ago is when we got our ruling that lowered the signature requirement, you know, for political bodies. And political bodies are defined as basically anybody who's not a Democrat or a Republican. And, mm-hmm. you know, now we get hit with this COVID-19. So, you know, things were looking great for us at the beginning of the year. And then, you know, COVID-19 occurs. And now it's like really difficult, if not impossible for us to get signatures. So we decided to bring this lawsuit and say, like, hey, you know, what happened here was that, you know, the governor's orders were not narrowly tailored to meet his needs, and that, you know, that they should fail and that we should be granted an injunction. And what we did was we asked the court to grant us this preliminary injunction or temporary restraining order so that the signature requirement would not be enforced. And what we were asking is that we just wanted to have our candidates, being the candidates of the Libertarian Party, the Green Party, and the Constitution Party, placed automatically onto the ballot. And they've done this, you know, in other states. There's a couple of rulings that came out where, you know, they said that the courts agreed to do that. So that's, you know, that's what we argued. It was a kind of a fun and interesting time, because what happened was, you know, we filed this. We didn't think it was going to take that long to get a ruling on this motion. But then what happened was literally maybe a 2 or 3 days after we filed the complaint, the Democratic Party of Pennsylvania decides they want to become interveners in the complaint, which
means
that like.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say, what does that mean?
So basically what happens, yeah, so what that means is that we were the plaintiffs, the defendants were Governor Wolf, obviously, Secretary of the Commonwealth, Kathy Buchfor, and then Jonathan Marks, who also is works in the elections. But then what happened was the Democratic Party came on. They said, well, hey, we have an interest in this case, too, because we want to make sure the elections are fair and that if we just allow the libertarians and the Greens and the Constitution Party put their candidates on, while we had to work so hard during the primary election, not during a pandemic, to get the signatures, that would be unfair for us.
You know, Drew, whenever they bring that up, I say, listen, you two old parties, you're the guys who made up these rules. Why are you complaining to me about them? If you don't like it, you could change them.
Right. And you know,
crocodile tears.
Ken, it's interesting that, it's interesting that you brought that up, because actually we thought that this was going to be a very straightforward case, but then all of a sudden the Democrats are like, well, no, we weren't going to call any witnesses. We're just going to go based on the facts and have the judge decide this based on the facts of the case and then our, you know, briefs and motions. But what happened was the Democrats like, no, we want to actually call witnesses. We want to have a formal hearing and take testimony. So, you know, and they sprung this on us like a day before this was scheduled to have this hearing.
Who are these witnesses, and how is that even relevant to what you're trying to accomplish there?
So the witness they called was a guy who's like some sort of political director with, I'm not even sure what his title was, within the Democratic Party. That's who the Democrats called. The state, to its credit, called Jonathan Marks. And then what we had to do was, you know, since they literally gave us like less than 24 hours notice that we needed witnesses for this hearing, we were on the phone all night calling up people of the Libertarian Party. And so, you know, we were able to get Steve Sheets, Kevin Gaughan, and Jennifer Moore.
That's our state chair, our executive director, and our Eastern vice chair. That those three
yes,
names,
that's
Steve
correct.
And Jen yes. and Kevin.
Yes, and so they all, luckily, they're all able to do it. They were able to find time to do it. And then we also got Timothy Runkle from the Green Party. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it was such a late notice that we couldn't find anyone from the Constitution Party to be a witness. So I don't think that was a huge issue because I think we had some very strong witnesses, you know, on the stand. And I think that they were all very credible. I think they held up well under cross-examination. But what was fun for me was on cross-examination for, you know, the state's witness, this is, you know, one of the top guys, Jonathan Marks. And
I know
Jonathan. I said to him, yeah, he was actually, I think, on the one of the defendants in the previous lawsuit that we filed against the state. But I said to him on cross-examination, I go, hey, exactly what you said, Ken. I go, wouldn't you agree that, you know, most of the people who are representing us in General Assembly are, you know, either Republican or Democrat, if not all of them are Republican or Democrat? And he says, yes. And I said, and you would agree that the primary system was created by Republicans and Democrats, you know, potentially for their benefit. And he goes, oh, yeah, I would agree to that. And I said, and you'd agree that if they thought that it was unfair, it'd probably be pretty easy for them to change that primary system,
yeah.
right? And he agreed to that, too. And in fact, when I even questioned the Democrats' witness, he also agreed to that. So it was just kind of interesting to get them to agree to that. But what I think was important with Secretary Marks was that he goes, well, on his direct examination, when his attorneys were asking him questions, you know, he mentioned like, well, there's nothing on the state's website that says like, oh, you know, that we're going to send people out to come and arrest you if you're out there trying to get signatures.
Well,
what I said to him was, yeah, but there's nothing on the website that says that that you won't do that, correct? And he says, yes. So,
well, and you know,
we were able to convey this. Right,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, and the executive producer here at the Pennsylvania Project, Mark Bazzacco, he was actually confronted by the police when he was out there collecting signatures, and they're ready to lock him up too.
Right. Yeah, so, you know, so the thing is that, in fact, it actually could and actually did happen.
It did happen.
You know.
To somebody we know.
And, right. So that's what was really crazy for me. And so I got him to admit that. What was really bizarre was the Democrats with their witness. You know, I was cross-examining him, and I heard him say, oh, well, the Department of State would accept signatures on nomination papers that are printed on 8.5 by 11 paper. Now, anyone who's been around for even the briefest amount of time would know that that's rule number one, is that you
yep.
have to print them on legal-sized
paper.
So luckily, this was during a Zoom. This was literally a Zoom meeting that was taking place, and it was a deposition that was taking place during Zoom. So I went on to my computer because I knew I was going to cross-examine this guy, and I pulled up the Department of State's website, and I found where it says that, you know, it must be printed on 8.5 by 14 paper. So it comes to me, and the very first question I asked him was, I said, can we go back to where you said that the Department of State would accept nomination papers on 8.5 by 11 letter size paper? And he says, yes. And I said, and you admit that you said that? And he said, yes. And I said, all right, I'm going to share my screen with you.
Man.
So I shared my screen. And I said, now you would admit that this is the Pennsylvania Department of State's website. And he says, it appears to be so. And I go, and could you read for me what is highlighted on my screen? And he says, all nomination papers must be printed on 8.5 by 14 size
yep.
paper. And I said, okay. And I go, and you would agree that that is legal size paper and not 8.5 by 11 letter size paper. And he said, yes. So we were able, at the very first question, we were able to catch him in a lie and say that he was an uncredible witness. Furthermore, you know, the Democrats brought him on because he had all this experience, apparently, in other states going around and collecting signatures, even for third parties. But I asked him, I said, how many times have you collected signatures for third parties in Pennsylvania? His answer was,
drum roll.
He's never done it. Yeah.
And this is an expert,
and I
right?
said to him, oh, and I said to him, how many times did you help any political party try to obtain signatures during the COVID-19 pandemic? And he said, not at all. So, you know, he really doesn't understand the struggle that we're dealing with here in Pennsylvania, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah.
So, you know, what we did was we did that hearing. We got the testimony from both those people, and then we each had to supply our own stipulated facts. And then what was going to happen was the judge was going to make his decision based on those facts. And on July 14th, the judge did make his decision.
Okay, I want to stop you right there. Two reasons.
Sure.
First of all, you said it was a fun cross-examination, and I thought, what? But I found out why, because these guys were just like sitting there with their thumbs in the wrong places. And the other reason I got to stop you is because we've got to take a quick break. I'm your caster, Ken Krawchuk, and you're listening to episode 68 of the Pennsylvania Project. We'll be right back after this information with more from our guest, lead attorney for the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party's ballot access lawsuit, Drew Miller, and we're going to hear the results.
Are you a small business owner, always looking for referrals? Do you have a streamlined approach to generating new referrals? Contact Stephen Worley to learn the fast, easy way to generate new referrals. Stephen has an all-inclusive system that will help you generate an extra 5 to 10 customers per week without spending a single dollar on ads. You won't have to create a website, have pictures taken, or write a single ad. Stephen will take the headache out of the process. Contact him at stephenworley.com. That's Stephen with a V, W-E-R-L-E-Y.com.
Hey, David Zeza here, cohort on the Pennsylvania Project. You know, it's easy to find a high-paying job. At least for some people it is. Employers are begging for competent leaders who know how to communicate effectively. But do those words describe you? Competent leader communicates effectively? Well, if not, or even if they do, you may want to consider joining Toastmasters. The mission of Toastmasters is to provide a supportive environment for learning communication and leadership skills. But does it really work? Hey, look at me. I joined Toastmasters and now I'm on the radio. So turn your life around like I have. Visit Toastmasters.org and contact a club near you. Visitors are always welcome, and be sure to mention you heard it on the Pennsylvania Project radio show. The future is anxiously awaiting competent leaders who know how to communicate effectively. You can be that leader. It all starts at Toastmasters.org.
Well, Governor Tom Wolf has been picking winners and losers by allowing corporations like Walmart to stay open, yet forcing small businesses to close. Now he's doing the same in politics. Wolf's Republican and Democrat buddies will appear on your ballot this November, but by executive order, he has excluded independents and third parties. The Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania doesn't think this is right. That's why we're suing Governor Wolf in federal court. Please help us in our legal battle against those who would limit your choices in the voting booth. Visit our website, lppa.org, and click donate. The Libertarian Party, the only political party that stands up for all of your freedoms, all of the time. lppa.org.
Hey, Ken Krawchuk here again, and we are back with episode 68 of the Pennsylvania Project, and with our guest, the lead attorney for the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party's ballot access lawsuit against Governor Big Bad Wolf. We have with us Mr. Drew Miller. Welcome back. And you know, Drew,
Thank you, Drew.
I also had to laugh when you said, when you started talking about the hearing, you said it was a fun and interesting time.
Yeah.
I think you need to get out a little more.
Well, it was great. You know, what was nice, though, is that they allowed the clients to listen while I was, you know, doing the cross-examination. So they were actually on a phone call, and Jennifer Moore told me later on, she says that while you were cross-examining Jonathan Marks, there are people who are listening from Montgomery County who are actually cheering while you were cross-examining. So
I heard the same thing. By all accounts, you did a bang-up job, sir.
Drew, you mentioned a little earlier that the Democratic Party jumped in because they wanted to make sure that this was fair. It sounds to me like they wanted to make sure it was fair for the Democratic Party.
Right. You know, and even in their a lot of their briefs that they filed with the court, what you were finding is that the root cause of why they wanted to try to stop us from having ballot access is because they saw us as a threat. I don't know if they necessarily saw us as a threat, but I think they saw the Green Party as a threat, you know, and so they, you know, it's going back to that whole notion that if you only have two options, people are going to, you know, inclined to choose from the lesser of two evils. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and, but they're still evil.
And I, right, right. You know, Ken, as you say, you know, you'd rather vote for someone you love and have them win than vote for someone you hate and, God forbid, you know, have them win and
yeah.
you know, or have them lose, I should say, you know, than have them win. So, yep. But yeah. So I, you know, going back to the story on July 14th, the judge issued his order, and I should probably just preface this by saying that what it was an order on our motion to grant a request for a preliminary injunction and a temporary restraining order. And just as a background, in order to get a preliminary injunction, we had to demonstrate that we had a likelihood of success in the merits,
right.
That we will suffer irreparable harm if the injunction is denied,
yeah.
that the granting of the injunction will not result in even greater harm to the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and that the public interest favors such relief. So that's basically what we had to prove. And what happened was the judge came up with his decision, and this is basically like the last, I'll read you the last paragraph of his decision.
You haven't said what that decision is. Do I want to do a drum roll here?
You could, yes.
No, I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Okay, that's fine. He says, it's just basically two sentences. It says, to obtain a preliminary injunction, the plaintiffs are required to clearly show that they are entitled to this extraordinary remedy. In addition, they have a particularly difficult burden here because they are seeking for the court to alter existing election laws, which the Supreme Court has repeatedly counseled against. Unfortunately, the plaintiffs have not met their high burden, and as they have not demonstrated that they are likely to succeed on the merits of their claims or that they will suffer irreparable harm absent such relief, accordingly, the court will deny the motion for a temporary restraining order / preliminary injunction. So he denied our order. You know, and this was our, I told the parties, this was basically our do or die moment, you know?
Well, that's, Drew, that's a poor choice of words because that means now we got to go out and get signatures and risk contracting the virus. It's a do
right,
and that, die that, moment.
Right. And I don't necessarily agree with the court's, you know, assessment because even in the court's order, they were going back and this is their memorandum that is, labeled the Democrats' witness as being a credible witness, you know, when clearly yeah, right. we proved that he was not a credible witness
right.
on the stand, and if he potentially was even lying under oath, we're not exactly sure if he was or not, or just like was completely ignorant,
clueless,
you know, to how this
yeah.
How this works in Pennsylvania. But you know, we can't really agree with what the judge said. We find it peculiar that he used all of the state's cases and talked about why our case was like those cases in terms of like why they didn't those courts didn't grant any type of relief to the plaintiffs, but you know, he really didn't mention any of the cases that we provided that basically talked about all of these courts that did provide such relief to the plaintiffs, and you know, and they talked in the opinion about how, well, you know, in Pennsylvania we have the ability to be both a circulator and a signator. So what we could do is we could sign our own, you know, nomination paper and send it in. And mm-hmm. what they were asking us to do was saying like, well, yeah, you might not be able to go out in the public and see people in public or get within 6 feet of people. But what you could do is you could email those people and have them print out a nomination paper on their own printer.
Right.
Now, mind you.
And who's got legal size paper?
That's exactly what I said to both of those witnesses on cross-examination. I go, you would admit that most people don't have legal-sized paper just laying around their house. And they both admitted that, you know. So, and they also admitted that, like, there are a lot of people who just don't have access to the Internet, who don't have laptop computers.
Or a printer.
Who don't have a printer. That's a luxury, you know what I mean, to a lot of people. So, the court basically said, like, there are these alternative ways of obtaining signatures that don't require, you know, in-person signature collection, and so we disagreed with that.
I disagree
now,
with that.
There's Yeah, now there's actually even some more news that just came out today, even right before I came onto the show.
Oh,
so
no.
What happened was we threw it around with my co-counsel, in this case, who was Attorney Oliver Hall and Attorney Mark Brown, who were geniuses when it comes to this type of stuff in terms of the election law, and they've been involved in all of the other previous lawsuits and actually a lot of lawsuits that are currently taking place throughout the country. And I said to him, do you think we should try to appeal this, to the Third Circuit, which would be just like essentially one court below the Supreme Court? And so we threw it back and forth, and they said, you know what, like, we were sort of leaning in the direction of saying, like, well, I don't know if we should or not. But then after the governor, with his orders today, came out, basically putting further restrictions on us or our ability to get signatures, we said, and then there's also actually just yesterday a court case from Virginia that was almost identical facts as ours, and the court in that case granted relief to the plaintiffs. They actually lowered the signature requirement and extended the deadline to get signatures. So what we did today was we just filed a motion to stay his order, and then we are actually filing appeal right now to the Third Circuit.
Thank you, sir.
To appeal the decision.
It sounds like a no-brainer. What the court's telling us to do is to go out there in violation of the law and go get signatures. And, of course, we can't do that. I've had reports from people trying to do it, and you walk up to somebody and say, hey, would you sign this piece of paper? And people run away screaming.
In violation of the executive order of the sitting governor.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous,
And what I think one of my big issues is the fact that, we contacted the governor's office right when this first began. In the first week of May, we contacted the governor's office and we said, listen, we need you to either do something for us or give us some guidance. And even until today, the governor's office never got back to us with any type of guidance or any type of exceptions, for us. And in every other state, in the court cases that the defendants used, to back up their case, those governors specifically said in their orders that petitioning, is excluded from these orders. So it is allowing people to go out and get petitions. We don't have something like that in Pennsylvania. Our governor never provided any type of that. And if you take a look, what has he provided? He's provided guidance for businesses. He's provided guidance for restaurants. He's provided guidance for the real estate industry. He's provided no guidance whatsoever
for
people who want to go out and try to get petitions.
What does he want us to do? Does he want us to go out and collect signatures in the middle of the George Floyd riots?
Well, you know what? Actually, now that you mention it,
don't tell me somebody suggested that.
Because while we were in the hearing, and having this debate at the hearing at trial, what happened was the counsel for the Democrats, mind you, the ones that have been really trying to support Black Lives Matters, said to us on the record that what we should have done was gone out while they were having these protests for George Floyd on the streets. We should have gone and tried to get signatures while this was going on. You know what I mean? And we said we said to them, like, can you imagine the optics of a third party candidate going to a rally for a man who was killed by police officers as an opportunistic way to try to get on the Pennsylvania ballot in November?
It's like dancing on George's grave. That's
right.
That's exactly right.
And furthermore, I even said, to their witness, when he was being cross-examined, I said, because he brought that up. And I said, but you would admit, though, that even though those people were out there, that technically they actually were defying the governor's orders. They were doing something illegal. And he admitted to that. So,
And we could go out there and illegally collect signatures from them. So it'd be criminals altogether.
Illegally collect signatures. Right. That is exactly right.
We're coming to the end of our time here. Is there anything else we need to cover? So I got it. So we went in there. We had all this great stuff. They had crappy witnesses, and it looked like a shoe-in. The judge came back and said, the heck with you. Go out there and violate the law and go get these signatures. And news today. Thank you, sir. We're appealing. You're appealing.
And yes.
Is there anything else? What else do we have? That's the current state?
That's just it now. Yeah, we're just filing the appeal. We're getting that. We're going to get that filed. We actually filed the notice of appeal just now, and then we're going to get our brief filed later on tonight. So.
Yeah, but the clock is ticking. We have, what, August 3rd? It's what, 2 weeks? We have about 2 weeks to get all this done? Is this going to happen?
Right. Well, we're requesting, like, essentially what would be like an emergency appeal. So it's going to be down to the wire. And really what's going to happen, what we're asking is we're asking the appellate court to either, you know, to grant the injunction and to extend the deadline, or to just allow us onto the ballot, you know, automatically, or if not, you know, to just extend the deadline and lower the signature requirement so that we at least have a shot, you know, if we gave it everything we had. But
All right. Well, good. Drew, that brings us up to date. We now see where we're going. It sounds like you're going to set a record and be the first person to be a guest on the show three times, because I'm going to want to hear what happens with this appeal. But we still have, about 30 seconds left. And I always like to, you've been here before, you know, I like to throw open the microphone and say, is there anything you want to talk about? It doesn't have to be about the case. You want to mention anything, some cause you want to champion? What would you like to say?
Sure. Yeah. I mentioned this before the last time. I think it's a worthy cause. I'm the board president of this organization in Pittsburgh called Community Human Services. We essentially help out the homeless population and the near homeless population in Allegheny County and really all of Western Pennsylvania. If people want to learn more about us or make a donation, that would be great. If you go to www.chscorp.org, you can find all the information you need.
Okay, chscorp.org.
.org.
That's Community Who Services?
Human Services. Yes.
chscorp.org. Excellent. Drew, thank you very much for the update. Thank you for a couple belly laughs. Thank you for the tears you brought to my eyes. And it sounds like we're going to have you back again soon.
Fantastic. I'll be looking forward to it.
Likewise. And that's going to have to wrap it up for the then portion of episode 68 of the Pennsylvania Project. Thanks again to our guest, lead attorney for the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party ballot access lawsuit, Drew Miller. We're going to pause for this information, and when we return, I will be ranting about something that really sticks in my craw, people pulling down statues.
The following is a commercial announcement.
Hey, Evan, how's it going?
Bad, Ken. Really bad.
Why? What's the matter?
Our friends at the Infernal Revenue Service paid me a personal visit the other day.
The Infernal Revenue Service?
Yep. Call them for what they are. They sent these two big brutes to the house. Scared us all half to death.
I bet. What do they want?
Money. Lots of it. Remember that part-time gig I took on last summer?
Oh yeah. You were raking in some big bucks.
Yeah, and all those big bucks went straight into my personal bank account. Turns out the IRS doesn't like that. And I didn't file any of the right forms or pay nearly enough in taxes. So they want it all now, right now, plus penalties and interest.
Ouch. Sounds like you should have called Amendment 16.
Hey, it's the damn 16th Amendment that got me into this predicament in the first place.
No. Amendment 16, the invoicing service. They'll invoice your client for the hours and expenses you report to them. And when your client pays them, they pay you, minus all required state and federal taxes. It's that easy. One call does it all. And they'll even have an accountant do your personal taxes for you come April Fool's Day. Come April 15th.
And they take care of all the taxes, all the forms?
Yep, and they can pass along certain tax breaks, too.
Man, I wish I knew about Amendment 16 sooner. Where can I find them?
On the web, of course, at amendment16.com, with 16 spelled out. That's amendment, SIXTEEN.com. One call does it all.
Have you heard the big news? The Pennsylvania Project is expanding dramatically. Each episode is now being broadcast multiple times a week on WWDB Talk Radio in Philadelphia, and the show has recently gone into syndication across Pennsylvania. Our success can be your success as well. A limited number of opportunities have recently come available where you can advertise affordably on the Pennsylvania Project. Not only will your message be heard throughout Pennsylvania's largest media market by far, all past episodes are always available for downloading at PennsylvaniaProject.com, at WWDB's website, on iTunes, and from many other popular podcast providers. So, here's your chance to become a permanent part of the first liberty-oriented talk radio show on WWDB since the legendary Irv Homer hung up his headphones. Interested? Drop us a line at PennsylvaniaProject.com today.
Hey, Ken Krawchuk here, and welcome to the me portion of episode 68 of the Pennsylvania Project, where I get to rant a bit about something that really sticks in my craw. You know what really sticks in my craw? People pulling down statues. As I mentioned earlier in the show, today's rant was triggered by a question from one of our regular listeners, Bernie McCann, up in Elwood City. He pointed out how I hadn't mentioned them yet. He believes it's well past time for societies to simply dispense with all the statuifying and deifying historical folks. But he does concede that we need some way to remember those who've made great contributions to our country history. Sounds like a tall order, Bernie. First of all, Bernie, I think you're correct. I have not mentioned the statue topplers. That's because I'm not a statue kind of a guy, one way or another. In fact, I'm pretty crippled, artistically speaking. Whether it's sculpture, painting, classical music, whatever. It's all meh to me. So the whole statutory thing, I think if anybody wants to statuify someone, to use your term, Bernie, makes no difference to me. But apparently it does make a lot of difference to some folk, and apparently quite a lot of difference to quite a lot of folk. Big in the news these days about this statue or that statue being pulled down. Christopher Columbus, Civil War heroes, former Philadelphia Mayor Frank Rizzo. The list of stiff victims have quickly gotten pretty much over the top. People are pulling down statues of George Washington, father of our country, Thomas Jefferson, the author of the Declaration of Independence, even Frederick Douglass, for God's sakes, he's a black guy. The guy's a former slave and abolitionist. Like, what did he do wrong? I don't know, it must have been a Minneapolis cop who pulled that one down. I don't know. Bottom line, Bernie, you got your wish. Society is spontaneously dispensing with statuifying and deifying these historical folk, just like you asked for. Lots of dispensing with statues going on these days. You got me wondering what's next. What's going to happen to Mount Rushmore, I wonder? Anyway, aside from the moral issue of destroying property that doesn't belong to the topplers, do you know what I'm really dreading in all this? Especially in light of Frederick Douglass, of all people, coming down. I'm afraid that people might start tearing down statues of Martin Luther King. No, no, don't laugh. I'm not sure if you saw it, but when the latest batch of JFK papers were declassified a couple years ago, there was a whole lot of dirt on Martin Luther King that came with it. Things like mistresses, children out of wedlock, orgies, rape, more. I just hope Reverend King is going to survive it all. Because what I'm really dreading is the destruction of something much greater than mere private property. I'm talking about the destruction of all the great things that those people stood for. Columbus, Washington, Jefferson, Douglass, King. I'm afraid that all the good that they've done will be thrown away along with their statues. And don't tell me it won't happen. Tell it to America's ex-dad, Bill Cosby. Great man, great comedian, and a great TV role model gone all the way back to the 60s when he was the first starring black actor on a serious drama on TV when he played alongside Robert Culp in I Spy. I used to watch that when I was a kid. But Bill Cosby, he self-destructed, and now all that greatness is gone. And then there's one of the greatest football players of all time, O.J. Simpson, self-destructed, gone. One of the greatest football coaches, Joe Paterno, gone. Pete Rose, gone. The list goes on and on and on. Do you see why I fear for Martin Luther King, for his memory, for his dream? There's one critical thing that these statuificationers are missing, and it's not a new phenomenon. Syndrome of great men self-destructing themselves. If you read the Bible, you'll see how the prophet Daniel told the king, I think it was Nebuchadnezzar, don't quote me on that, how all great men have feet of clay, that everyone has made mistakes in their lives, whether royalty or peasant, prince or pauper. Haven't you made mistakes? I know I have. Everyone has something in their past they're not proud of. For example, it's a fact that we all used to mess our diapers. I hope that's not what we're remembered for, though. And we shouldn't be. But Bernie's right. We do need a way to remember who've made these great contributions to our history. But he thinks that finding a way to do that is the problem. Bernie, I think you're too late. I think the problem is that people are finally realizing what all these historical figures actually did. The great people have done all these less than great things, and now they're getting publicized. And we, the people, having learned, the backlash, I guess, must have been inevitable. You know, we're all about solutions here at the Pennsylvania Project, and solving the correct problem is paramount to solving it correctly. But what's the real problem to be solved here? You know, to my mind, it's improving ourselves, both as individuals and as a society. And that learning on how to improve ourselves, it comes in two varieties. First, Obviously, we can improve ourselves by emulating the best of others and by avoiding their mistakes. But when you tear down statues of great people like Martin Luther King, Thomas Jefferson, and yes, even Bill Cosby, it denies us from learning all the great things these people did. And the second point is that without the statues, without the history, society will soon forget not just great people, but the great things that they taught us. So I guess I should amend my earlier statement about my antipathy towards statuary. Personally, I think we should let those statues stand. Some as memorials to what great things they did. Some as memorials that scream out, never again! And some statues that are going to be a mix of both. Bottom line is, let's remember the great men for the great things they did and forgive them their trespasses. Or, to quote that leadership guru, John Maxwell, quote, "It is said that a wise person learns from his mistakes. A wiser one learns from others' mistakes. But the wisest person of all learns from others' successes." Indeed. Let's not throw it all away. On that all-encompassing note, that's going to have to wrap it up for episode 68 of the Pennsylvania Project. What do you think about people pulling down statues? Or about the fine people at Rotary International? Or Joe Paterno? Or Bill Cosby, or anything somewhat Pennsylvania-related. If you have something to say, we'd love to hear from you. You can contact us at PennsylvaniaProject.com right after you sign our petition, please. And you can hear us there, too, as well as on iTunes and a plethora of other popular podcast providers. Today's episode is courtesy of Amendment 16 Limited and produced live at the studios of WWDB Radio, broadcasting in Philadelphia at 868 on the AM dial every Saturday at 10 a.m., and every Monday at 4 p.m., among other times. Not to mention in Kutztown on KUR Radio at 1670 on the AM dial, every Monday morning at a ridiculous 7 a.m. Oof. Every episode is also released as a podcast every Tuesday at PennsylvaniaProject.com. Our webmaster is Stephen Worley. Featured Toastmaster narrator is Evan Transu. Featured Toastmaster cohort, David Zezza. Our official bartender, who I haven't seen in months, Brooke Smith. Keyboard Wizard and next week's guest, Joe the Pag, radio producer Brett Kronberger, executive producer Mark Bazzacco, and me, your caster, Ken Krawchuk. Thanks for joining us, and remember, more important than toppling the statue correctly is to topple the correct statue. We'll see you next time.